now we bring in this, you know, quote, deadline, which is what's going to happen at the end of 2025. So a little less than 2 years. And that is that the amount that you can have will be effectively cut in half. And because this number changes with inflation, it's not exactly clear what that would be. But let's say it would be 14 million, then it will go down to 7 per person starting January 1 of 2026.
Welcome to the Financial Commute, a weekly podcast that gives you the rundown on what's going on in the current market, how it affects you, and what you can do about it, all designed to fit into your commute. I'm your host, Chris Galeski, and each week I share the table with a knowledgeable guest, including Morgan Wealth Advisors, fund managers, and investment analysts, to break down complex financial topics. Our goal is to provide you with the tools to help you navigate any market environment, leading to a path of more confident investing. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of The Financial Commute. I'm your host, Chris Galeski, joined by wealth planner Brian Standing. Brian, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Death and taxes, it's that time of year, March of 2024.
It's kind of always that time of year.
Yeah. It's the only two things that are certain in life, I guess.
Yeah. People are like, when's your busy season?
I don't know.
All kidding aside, you made me get dressed up and put on an actual jacket for today because I couldn't sit next to you and not look professional.
I did too.
We're here to talk about estate planning, basic concepts of who should be thinking about it. But the main reason is because in about 21 months, the estate planning rules or laws or limits are set to change. And people shouldn't just wake up 20 months from now and say, oh, I want to make some decisions.
This is true.
Yeah.
I think, spoiler alert also, the IRS wants to collect money. The government needs money. And this is one way to do it.
Right.
Right. Is to tax people when they pass away.
Right.
I'm not going to take a position on that. You're welcome to have yours. But that's the world we live in.
But, you know, we're going to get into some estate planning concepts, who should be thinking about it, decisions that you should be made, that you should be making, things to consider. But the reason why you're here is a couple of reasons. Number one, you've been a practicing estate planning attorney for a long time. And we've had a very close relationship as our firms and giving advice for clients. But you are also a wealth planner here, an employee at Morton. So you're able to kind of sit along the same side of the table with us as advisors and the clients, be able to look at the overall values of estates, see how they're projecting long term, understand what the impacts would be of giving a piece of their estate away into an irrevocable trust or a different entity would affect somebody. So that way you can go work with their estate planning attorney, or if they don't have one, your law firm Via Law can take advantage of that and execute for those clients.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think one of the really rewarding parts of the wealth planning role at Morton is that the estate tax planning conversation, it really starts in a much more personal environment. We're not throwing a bunch of like alphabet soup of strategies on the wall and saying like, you could do this or you could do this, because who knows? It generally starts when you're talking with your wealth advisor and you're talking about values around money. You don't just give your kids millions of dollars. Well, most people don't. They structure it thoughtfully. And so it's in that context where you're talking about values around money. What does our estate look like? Do we care about taxes? Do we care about, the next generation after that, or charitable endeavors, or who knows?
Yeah.
And in that conversation, we can sort of determine right up front whether estate tax planning even makes any sense, because we can talk about the concepts, maybe some of the drawbacks or risks that you run. Yeah. And before you're ever sitting in an attorney's office, again, no offense to great estate attorneys, you now know what you're going into. And you're not in the attorney's office starting with like values around money, right? You're
right.
Ready to like get down to business.
Yeah, especially if you're paying hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars an hour for those conversations.
Yeah.
Should be thoughtful. So today we're not talking necessarily about who needs an estate plan, because everyone has one. Everyone has one, whether they had it drafted by a state attorney or not. There are rules that are in place.
That's right.
Today we're going to focus more on who should be thinking about having an estate tax planning conversation. What are things to consider? What should we be thinking about? That's the conversation for today.
It is.
So let's start there. Who should be thinking about having an estate tax plan?
So currently, admittedly, a small portion. hopefully, many of your listeners have aspirations to become in this group of people who need estate tax planning.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned at the start, we have exemptions right now, which say that if you're over a certain net worth when you pass away, this is worldwide assets if you are a resident here, then you pay estate tax. That number is $13.6 million.
Per person.
Per person.
Yep.
Right? So you're over $27 million for a couple.
So if my estate is worth $14 million and it's $13.6 million, mm-hmm. right? So that $400,000 that's over that $13.6 million, that $400,000 is going to be subject to some estate.
Yeah, some 40% tax, you know, 160 grand, something like that.
That's all, just 40%.
Just 40%, yeah. You know. Okay. And California does not have an estate tax,
correct?
To be clear. We have a lot of other taxes,
yeah.
But we don't have that one.
And so people that have an estate, as either as an individual or a married couple, that's north of 13.6 or 27.2 million. I was good at math there.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't memorize that. They should be thinking about having an estate tax planning company.
They should. But now we bring in this, you know, quote, deadline, which is what's going to happen at the end of 2025. So a little less than 2 years. And that is that the amount that you can have will be effectively cut in half. And because this number changes with inflation, it's not exactly clear what that would be. But let's say it would be $14 million. Then it will go down to 7 per person starting January 1 of 2026. And there are quite a few more families who are between, you know, 14 and 27,
yeah.
than 27 plus. So that does capture a much larger group of individuals who need to be thoughtful about planning, because right now, today, they're not taxable. And that's great. And if they do nothing, and of course, we hope they do live two right. more years, right. all of a sudden their estate is taxable when this law expires, no. subject to an extension. And I don't know if you're interested or people will be interested in any comments on whether it will be extended. Obviously, we don't know.
Well, we get that question a lot, especially because, I mean, look, it is an election year and the estate tax laws have changed, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 or 8 times over the last 20 years, I believe. So it's a number that changes a lot.
Yeah.
And it's going to be in the headlines likely more over the next 20 months.
Exactly right. And I mean, just as a, we can just briefly note that the only way it gets extended, because it automatically reverts back, this is built into the law,
yep.
is if a new law is passed, and it's generally part of the budget. For technical reasons, you don't need more than 60 votes in the Senate, which is filibuster proof, if it's part of the budget. So as long as you can justify it as a budget thing, you can force it into the 50 votes only rules.
Got it.
That's why these things only last 9 years, because it has to be neutral after 10 years to go in the budget. So then it reverts back before the end. So all that being said, the only way we get a new law and an extension of a higher exemption mm-hmm. is if they voted in, which is very likely to be only if you find Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican President.
Right.
And so I think people should be planning that, you know, just in case those for people who want fewer taxes, that those stars don't align.
Right.
And at least be prepared for what you would want to do in the event of the exemption going back down.
Right.
And so that might lead us in, not to take your role here, into, well, what does that even mean?
Right. and running the financial planning analysis and the projections to see, can you afford to remove assets from your estate? Because if you remove them, you might have some control or decision making, but you lose assets to income and other things. And we'll get into that. But the current estate tax rules, let's call it $13.6 million per person.
Mm-hmm.
That's set to revert back or get cut in half in about 20 months, December of 2025. If you're leaving assets to a spouse,
mm-hmm.
you can leave unlimited. There's no...
Yeah, so just to be clear, estate taxes apply when assets are left to beneficiaries at death
yep.
who are not a spouse, a U.S. citizen spouse, and not charity.
Not charity.
Right.
Yeah.
And so basically, if you're leaving it to children, other beneficiaries, over the limit, that's when estate taxes come in. Now, eventually, with the spouse... they'll get estate taxes when he or she passes away. It's just a delay,
yeah.
right? You just tell the IRS, like, no, we're not going to pay you now. We'll pay you later. So that's important just to have the context, which maybe we'll probably get back into when we talk about who needs to do estate tax planning. It really depends on your estate plan, right?
Right.
What you really need assets to.
Right.
So the important thing I think that we should mention about this deadline is just the way the estate and gift taxation rules work, just so we have a foundation before going on.
Right.
Because I sometimes, after doing this for 16 years, I maybe assume some knowledge. And so the way to think about this $13.6 million or $7 million or whatever it is, it's a transfer exemption. It's just the amount you can give to anyone else that will not be subject to tax. And the reason for that, that it's a transfer exemption, is that if you keep it, it obviously is taxed when you're gone.
It's part of your estate.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you tried to give it away while you're living, well, they have to keep track of that, because everyone would just give things away while they're alive and there would never be estate tax.
Yeah.
So that's why there is a gift tax exemption as well. It was a gift tax and then an exemption. So just, I mean, to make it easy, you give $2 million to your kids, $1 million each to buy a house. There's no tax to pay, but you file a return and you tell the IRS, hey, IRS, I used $2 million of my 13.6. I've got 11.6 left.
Yep.
And when the exemption goes down to 7, you start with 7. You've used 2, you're at 5. So that's the sort of game theory behind using this, is that when it reverts back to 7, for example, if you haven't used more than 7, you haven't really utilized...
You haven't really taken advantage.
...the extended exemption.
Right.
Right, just to be clear. So right. We kind of have the ground rules on, like, what are we even talking about with this gift and estate tax stuff?
Understood. And by being able to gift it away, it can go into a structure, and then it passes to the next generation estate tax-free. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so there's just, I guess, it's nice to sort of round out all of our taxes that apply, right?
Right.
And again, because they're transfer taxes, what they're trying to do is get money at every generation, right? Mm-hmm. So every time someone dies, they take a little piece, big piece, depending on your definition of those words.
Right.
And so that means that there's an estate tax if you die. It means there's a gift tax if you try to give it away before you die. It also means that if you were to give assets to the next generation, straight to grandchildren, there's like a third potential taxation, you know, rule that comes into play called a generation skipping tax that says, wait a minute, not only is it not going to get taxed when you die, now we miss the kids' generation, so we're going to simulate that tax too. So it's 40% and then 40 more percent on top of that, and then finally the gift goes to the grandchildren. Now there's an exemption,
yep.
$13.6 million, but just conceptually speaking, what we're trying to do is, if we're doing estate tax planning, reduce assets that will be subject to taxes at death and keep assets out of the next generation's estate as well, so they can grow their own 13.6 or whatever it is without inherited assets being added to it,
right,
with special trust structures and things like that.
And so because the complexity of our tax code and the estate tax,
which keeps me employed,
right, keeps you employed, but that's why it's important to be able to do two things, right? Identify what it is you're trying to accomplish, the values that you have around money, understand the projections where you are at life and what you need in order to get the most life out of your wealth, and then you can go into making some decisions. So what are some, before we get into strategies and other concepts, what are some other things that we should understand when we're looking at making making some of these gifts? I mean, what are we really doing?
Yeah. Most important thing, and it sounds simple, but you'd be surprised. Clients come in and they'll say something like, well, I'll just put the buildings in my kids' names.
Yeah.
So, cool. You know, we'll file a gift tax return and they'll own it.
Yeah.
They said, okay, well, do you need the income? And they said, well, yeah, no, I'm going to keep living off the income.
Right.
So it'll be in their names.
Yeah.
And the IRS says, okay, well, you haven't done anything, right? So the
because you're still benefiting from the income,
yes.
You haven't really given this away, and so it's not really a gift.
Yes, they're very much a substance over form thing with the IRS, right?
Yeah.
It has the substance of whatever the, you know, economic entity is, has that changed? And so if you are giving something away, but you're still getting the income, the IRS says you haven't really given it away.
Unless maybe you give up control.
Even then,
okay.
So right.
Talk through that.
Yeah, so there are multiple things that need to be given up.
Yeah.
Initially, it is the income itself. Now, again, this is on a gift of assets. there are other strategies maybe we can touch on, and then in future episodes dive a little deeper.
Right.
But conceptually speaking, a gift is a gift. When you give away an asset, you give away its economic benefits, right? You don't get to have those anymore. That's part of the gift.
Seems fair.
Yeah, that's right. So that's one issue. The second issue is, well, I don't need the income, but I really want to be doling out the money to my kids, right? Well, that's not different enough from having that money go into your bank account and just giving them money when you want to put it in this new entity, this new trust, but you're in charge and you decide if and when the kids get money. The IRS says, no, that you've retained still too much control.
Yeah.
So you have to consider both of those, giving up the income and giving up the right to control where the income goes, at least in order to change it, right?
Yeah.
You could set the rules up front. It's all discretionary. My trustee decides if and when my kids receive distributions. You're just not going to be that distribution trustee, that person in charge of when they get it. Could be a friend.
Makes sense.
They'll probably listen to you if you take your call.
Sometimes you see friends, you know, work together on this. And you hear complex structures like family limited partnerships and LLCs and different types of structures. And we're not going to get into the strategy behind those in this episode.
But it's a good
time. We will later. But they typically use those structures so that way they get a discounted value. So if they put $10 million into a family limited partnership that they're a small owner in and they don't have as much control, or they give up more control over time, for estate tax gifting purposes, that entity is not valued at $10 million. It's maybe valued at 7.5 or 8 or even potentially 6.5, something like that. So the reason why those structures exist and you're adding in layers of complexity is to be able to discount the overall value of your estate so you can give more assets away. I mean, that's typically why those are.
Yeah, this is an important concept. The structure itself isn't the strategy. It sort of leverages it, or sort of like turbocharges the strategy, right? So what you want to do is, either if you're gifting or if you own something at death, you want to own potentially a discountable interest, right? So that it's not valued as high for estate tax purposes.
And these are strategies that are meant to be deployed for people that are going to be subject to estate taxes. So net worth north of, call it, $27 million.
Right. You technically wouldn't want this if you're not subject to estate tax.
Right.
Because you want the highest valuation possible. You want a new basis, when you pass away so that you can sell without capital gain. So that's a separate concept. So conceptually speaking, the idea here is, well, if I give an interest in, let's say, this $10 million building, but instead it's some kind of limited interest, a non-voting LLC interest or a limited partner interest, and you give away, you know, $5 million of that, it's not worth $5 million, as you said, because they can't vote, they don't have control, they can't go.
They can't raise their hand and say, give me all the money right now. Yeah, it's
and so you intentionally create the structures for the purpose of future gifting, future sales, or just passing away owning a discountable interest through this entity type, right? So it complements some strategy, but it's not the strategy, right? It allows us to utilize a strategy at a lower valuation.
So a lot of people like to give away real estate. Like, what are the pitfalls and risks, like, with gifting real estate itself?
Yeah, so this is the one where we have the most sort of diligence required up front.
Yeah.
Because we find that a lot of people, especially in California, their net worth is tied up with real estate, right? It makes sense if they've held it a long time. And they also believe that it is an asset that will continue to appreciate, sort of in dollar terms, right? So from an estate tax standpoint, that's a good asset to give, because you want to give things away that will go up in value. Because one of the other things, maybe foundationally, that I'll just mention is the discount obviously allows you to give something away right away at a lower value. The second sort of fundamental benefit of gifting now versus later is future appreciation, right? If you gift $1 million now and you live another 30 years, that's going to be much larger. If you kept that million and passed away, it's still in your estate.
So you used $1 million of your estate exemption, but it grew to 10 or 15.
Exactly right.
And your beneficiaries are benefiting from that gift and the appreciation.
Yeah. So even if the estate exemption does not change, if you feel comfortable giving things away, sooner is better than later, just for the appreciation after the gift.
Yeah.
So back to the real estate question. For those reasons, that's a good asset to give away. For a lot of other reasons, it becomes a struggle. Number one, leverage. People have loans. Well, those loans say that you are the borrower. If you don't own that property anymore, the loan is due. Yeah. They're going to find out. So we're not going to play the game of like, keep paying the mortgage. You're going to have to go get new insurance because now an irrevocable trust owns the building. Insurance is going to check with the lender. We're not going to hide this.
Right.
So unless you're planning to get potentially refinancing with an irrevocable trust, which won't be at good rates and is sometimes challenging to begin with,
yep.
you might have to shift debt around to have encumbrance-free property to give mm-hmm. right in the first place. So we always want to know that. The second problem is there's sometimes, and I've seen this many times, taxes to pay on a gift because you have a building that you've depreciated. You've basically gotten value out of it by saving taxes, depreciating this. And then you've leveraged it. You've taken out more cash tax-free. Mm-hmm. If you give that property away and you owe that debt, it counts as a sale. So you're taxed on the amount of your debt above that basis. Yeah. We don't have to get too technical today.
Right.
The point is, it limits us.
It's just not that simple
any
is
debt
what you're trying to say.
To give away. And then finally, in California, property tax reassessment.
Yeah. This is the part that people don't quite understand, but is also a needle inside. And it's also another reason why that third generation of inheriting that piece of real estate sells it and takes the cash to do
yeah.
something else.
And again, these are detailed rules with, yeah. you know, entities and LLC, things like that. The point is that it used to be a little more friendly to transfers between parents and children. Those rules have been changed, a few years back, yep. if you remember, that was a Prop 19.
Prop 19,
yeah. What it requires is one extra level of analysis. If we transfer this building, how much can we transfer without a new property tax basis? If there is a new property tax basis, how much is it going to be? Who pays it? Is it triple net? Maybe the tenant pays it. I mean, we're not just going to dump them
right.
a huge tax on them, but it's just another element. And so when people get into this, they start to throw up their hands like, I don't even want to deal with this. But it's worth it if we put in the time.
Yep.
It just means that real estate is challenging, too.
Well, we've seen examples where somebody owned an apartment building and they're collecting the rents and it's generating nice cash flow for them. But then when it transferred to that next generation and the property tax went up, the net income was not nearly as attractive because of that appreciation over the years. Maybe they, bought an apartment building for $2.5 million many years ago. It's worth 22 today. That's a big difference in property tax that you're going to pay.
Right.
But we've talked about an awful lot of things today.
Before, we're just getting started.
Yeah, I know.
we have warmed up, Chris.
We have more episodes that we can go into a deeper dive. So before we kind of wrap it up and kind of summarize some of the key points that we made, is there any other key points that you thought would be beneficial for today?
I think we touched on it briefly, and so I want to mention that there, the flip side of the gifting is the basis issue that we mentioned.
No.
And so
the cost basis
and not the property tax basis. Exactly right. And so if
what you bought it at plus improvements,
less depreciation, like that, right?
Yeah.
In other words, if you sold it, would you have a capital gain?
Yep.
And the reason for that and the reason why estate tax planning might and of course does have personal elements there is that sometimes the property that goes up the most in value isn't the best one to gift because the kids are not keeping that one.
Yeah.
Like they don't like that property. Maybe they could exchange it, for example. But let's say that's for whatever reason not
the
what they
best
want
to
do.
Way. The best way to overpay for your future real estate to save taxes in today is to do a 1031 exchange. I love it.
Yeah. yeah. So if they know they're selling that one, well, maybe you do estate tax planning with other things to get the basis step up at death on one of those. Especially if you have two spouses and one passes away first. You wouldn't want to gift that low basis real estate you don't want. You hold it. There's no estate tax when one person dies. You get a new basis. Survivor can sell it. No capital gain. Do some other planning with it. It's just something to think about. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah.
You get the estate tax benefits when you give something away. You don't get a new basis. So we just need to be thoughtful about that.
It's very similar to where when one spouse passes away and you've got some assets and some real estate, when you're funding a marital trust, don't just take the real estate. Don't just take the home, right? Don't give up all the assets.
Right.
We have to be thoughtful. So,
yeah.
you know, let's return back. Yeah. Who should be thinking about estate tax planning before getting into specific
Terms? So this is exactly where one would start, right? Because there's, in my mind, there's like this flow chart. There's like this threshold of like, are you taxable, first of all, or might you be after the estate laws change? Let's say it's yes. Who are you leaving assets to, right? We have to look at the estate plan. If you have a foundation and most of it's going there,
if you're giving it to a charity, it doesn't matter.
Let's not complicate your life, right?
I have a client whose net worth has grown quite a bit substantially, and they're likely to be subject to estate tax in the future, but the majority of their estate is going to a charity when they're gone. We do not need to rush to make decisions.
Right. Yeah. So you're taxable. You want to leave things to, let's say, your children and future generations, not to charitable beneficiaries. You care about estate tax. There are clients who say, it is what it is.
I'm fine.
I don't want to complicate my life.
Yeah.
So we have to have not only the estate, but the desire to actually reduce the tax.
Yeah.
So then finally, we're at a stage where it's like, okay, does it make sense? Let's talk about what it would take from a standpoint of effort and details that we need, what you're giving up, willingness to have some complexity in your life after these strategies. And if you get through all these steps, then it's like, okay, I'm a good candidate for some of these crazy acronyms that we'll get into.
Well, I'm looking forward to the future episodes where we get to talk about SLATs and FLPs and ILITs and IDGITs and all this fun stuff.
Just call me an IDGIT?
Yeah, I did call you an IDGIT. Brian, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us, and we hope this episode has provided you with a roadmap to feel more confident as an investor. To receive notifications about weekly episodes, email us at financialcommute@mortonwealth.com.